The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informal look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, PeteEvans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Britta, thank you so much for joining us. How are you, sister?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me on.
So tell me, you were just saying before we recorded that you had a very successful weekend. Tell me about one of the things that you do in the world to express your voice and your creativity.
Oh, I do a lot of different side hustles, but this weekend was the Reclaim the Line rally that was on at the Queensland, New South Wales border. So Coolangatta and Tweed here in Australia, for those listening overseas. And so I was the event manager for that rally. And we had basically a coming out party of really big names using our stage, or a podium, I should say, as a platform, pun intended, to really get very important messages out there about medical segregation. And it was really incredible, because the idea of a pop-up music event, which is what this was, it was a Face the Music pop-up event. And it just included such a caliber of talent coming forward and using that as their very first time to speak publicly on this issue, particularly music, because music's always been designed to unite us. And that's what is sort of playing out right now, is all this segregation. Where do we actually find the spirit to come back together? And music is a revolutionary act. It always has been. So it was really beautiful to see that come together with the likes of Ziggy Alberts and Kai Linehart, Dallas James, many, many musicians and speakers such as Trevor Hendy and John Farris. So we were over the moon with the crowd, the energy, the piece of unification, and the way the police just got together with the crowd, held hands with the crowd, clapped with the crowd. It was just such a beautiful experience, and it reminded us that what we're in right now is – because I don't believe that you fight for freedom. I believe you exercise it. But I felt this energy of people coming back to that recognition of what freedom looks like and feels like again.
Beautiful. And I love the way that you explain that as well, because I've never been one to resonate with the word fight. And as you said, to fight for your freedom, it means that you don't have it to begin with. So why would you fight for something that you don't believe you have? And over the last 2 years, I have been to one rally, and thank you and your colleagues for inviting me to many. Unfortunately, we're usually doing some sort of wellness retreat here at our Evolve Sanctuary. We actually done three back-to-back weekends. Every time someone asks, they say, can you come? I'm like, ooh. Keep inviting me, because I would love to come and speak at one when I am free. Even though I'm free always, but free to speak. And it's interesting, because as you talk about music, it is such a powerful tool for getting a message out there, just like memes are and rallies are and protests and marches. And I have said many a time on this podcast that I'm surprised that over the last 20 months that there hasn't been more songs, especially the first year and a half, really addressing what's going on. Like,
if you ever wanted content, like, it's there for you. And there is an audience that is, I wouldn't say crying out for it, but would be very receptive, and it would resonate very deeply. And you just mentioned a few names then, and Trevor Hendy is one of my closest and dearest friends, and so great that he has decided to speak his truth. I mean, he has always spoken his truth, but now he has been called into the fight or the non-fight or the space of authenticity for himself in this. And John Farris as well, for anybody listening who doesn't know who John Farris is, he is one of the founding members of INXS, and INXS are in my top five bands of all time. And I often share their music on my Telegram page, and I often share songs on my Telegram page most days as a way of hopefully planting the seed or letting people remember the power that they have within them. I shared Narco today. I think yesterday I shared Jamiroquai. And I have shared, as I said, many INXS songs, because they were really on in their early days talking about how to express themselves freely. And I have had a good chat with John Farris many, many years ago in a very different setting. It was at our nightclub that we owned. And I'll never forget it. It must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. And I said to him, I said, I was just listening to one of your albums today. And I said, one of my favorite songs is Dancing on the Jetty. And 2 in the morning, we're sitting in our booth at the nightclub, and he starts singing it to me. And just that memory of him singing one of my dearest songs was something I'll never forget. And so congratulations for creating a vehicle or a platform, as you said, for people to be able to share. And I'm fascinated to know about the energy that you felt in that arena of people standing up. And maybe for the international viewers and listeners, you might want to explain the enormity of what it is that you and others have set in motion here in Australia.
Yeah, sure. So for those that don't know the significance of Boundary Street, which is where we had our rally, Boundary Street was actually used for segregation of our Indigenous Original Nations people here. So they wouldn't be able to cross over Boundary Street unless they had a temporary white pass. And so that segregation was felt a very long time ago here in Australia. And we're back to that now, where unless you're double vaccinated, you are not able to cross a border to see your family or your friends or to go to work on either side. So unfortunately, we're back, I guess, history repeating, because there's a karmic cycle that we need to go through as humanity right now in order to put more glitches in this matrix. But essentially, the reason we found this spot so significant is because medical segregation is not something that you just type or sit around talking about. You have to rise to that occasion. And John played a song for me, John Farris from INXS, that he just spoke into Pete. He played a song for me that he wrote called We Are Awakening. And we had a really long discussion about it. And one of the things that comes through for me is that I am very grateful for so many people being able to have an awakening experience during these times of COVID. But I'm also at a point in my journey, and I think everyone's sort of understanding that this is the trajectory we're on, is that it's we are well beyond an awakening. We are in bed, a lot of us, and we need to rise up and get on our feet. And this is what the significance of rallying and standing up does. It's a collective consciousness of energy that brings people together and says, actually, we're not alone. We're on the right path of creating change, and we can do this together, because a lot of this energy of fight or flight comes from feeling alone. And when you are surrounded by people who hold a very safe and unifying container for you, which is what we did for this rally, it's emotional, it's beautiful, and it's very different heart transmission than you would get being on a webinar or a seminar. Not to say that that's not a wonderful thing, they are, but it's a different level of energy. It's the human connection, which is so important. And it's also why I'm on this call, to speak into the human connection and Gaia and the Gaia Code and the film that we've produced and launched, because it all marries together. It all marries together in that we need to understand our role in the bigger web of life and nature. And I think that we're all starting to understand that chemicals and this corporate greed and all of these layers upon layers and layers of information that we are bombarded with daily is actually taking us away from our inner guidance, our inner connection, our inner wisdom. And we're having to come back to that place. And that place is the most sacred place that we need to be able to find our way to. And I think that a lot of people are getting there. And I feel that's a really exciting time to be alive. It's my friend Nathan. I sometimes have these moments when I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, just these moments where you go, come people see this. And he says, Renat, this is such an exciting time to be alive. Don't you forget that. And it does. It brings me back to the ability to create change right now based on such a strong value system that people are really becoming clearer on. It's it is an amazing time to be alive.
Tell me about the protests or the rallies or the freedom marches. In a way for people to understand that, do they actually affect change in the way that people expect, or is it in a different way that, is it subtle, or is it like, is there a desired goal or expectation from doing this, or is it, I feel compelled to do it. It's in my intuition. I'm going to put it on, and whatever happens, happens. And the reason I'm asking you this is because a lot of people expect, that I've spoken to, they expect change to happen immediately, or there's not enough people turning up to these, so what's the point in doing it? Or we're seeing more and more people attend these. And I guess what I'm throwing out there is, does something need to happen at these protests or rallies or events for it to be tangible, or can it be on the subtle or energetic that perhaps we actually have no idea what the ramifications or the ripple effect will be from either attending or not attending something like this?
Yeah, right. It's a really good question, Pete. I think, firstly, you talked about the calling, and I don't know that the creator, how do I say this? The creator doesn't call the qualified. I believe the creator already qualified the called. And there's a spiritual path that we surrender to and we cannot control. And if we are called to step forward with crowds or alone, I think that's fine either way, or both potentially. But the role of this rally is very much to understand that when we look back at 2021, that we can say that we stood for that we remembered people amongst us who chose to be free, and that we did it for future generations. And I think historically, there has always been and there will always be people coming together to stand for what they believe in. And it's a very important part of our ability to speak our truth. And so from that perspective alone, I can honestly say that every single speaker we've ever had at our Reclaim the Line rallies, and they've grown by about 3 to 4 times every single time we've done them, has been a first-time speaker on their topic in public about this medical segregation. They've spoken for the very first time. And I can tell you, as an event manager that's on stage watching them about to enter that moment, it is one of the most goosebump, electrifying experiences I've ever had in my life, to see them hold themselves in absolute shakiness and absolute power, but also in an absolute place of vulnerability, to get up there and speak a truth to a crowd of people. It is such a special experience, and it's very potent. It's very potent to see that live and to feel that come through your body is powerful. And if we can do that for each other, and if we can help seed that information and that energy into people and bring them into that collective, I think that's really important work.
Mm. I spoke at one of the Sydney rallies earlier this year. It was in March, and it was a very memorable experience for me. I remember being in front of all the people, and just before I got up on stage, as you said, I had all of that go through me, the goosebumps, the vulnerability, the powerful or the power in me. And I remember just before I got up on stage, I needed to take my shoes off just to feel the earth, because we were in Hyde Park, feel the earth under my feet, because it was all very overwhelming. I had hundreds of people just wanting to touch me. It was an unusual experience for me personally, because I was like, fuck, this is really strange. People just wanting to touch. And it's all the only way I could describe it. And I've never had that before. I was like, whoa, I need to get grounded here, because this is a little bit too much for me at this particular point in time. And we had the paparazzi there. There was, I think, 10 of them in front of me just taking photos the whole time before I even got up on stage, which is why I had to take off my shoes. I was like, whoa, you know, Gaia, Mother Earth, I need to be connected here. I need a little support here, a little help, or a lot of help. And, you know, I had to rely on all the tools that I had. And one of the greatest tools is nature, even though it was in the city, but we're in the park, which helped me a lot. And I never prepare anything that I'm about to say. And the first words that came out of my mouth, I believe, was, I am not here to save any of you. Because that's what it felt like, with people all touching me. Like, I was like, whoa. Oh, you can't be transferring. My interpretation is you're transferring your hope or your wanting me to help you. I was like, oh, I don't think I can do that. And so that's what verbalized. I'm not here to save you. You're here to save yourselves. And we actually don't really need saving anyway. You know, we just need to remember. Mm. And it's interesting, because the song that I posted today was called On the Verge by Narco and Medicine for the People. And there's a line in that that resonates so deeply. It says, we are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the ones we've been waiting for. And the other part of my speech that I remembered was I mentioned the tribal people of this country, and I said, I do believe they hold a very important key to all of this. Not the only key, but I do believe that their wisdom, their resilience, their connection to spirit and to Mother Earth is something that I believe will be needed for anybody that is curious about what they can teach us. And it's so fascinating that you talk about the original definition of Boundary Street. I didn't know that. So tell us about your experience so far with the First Nation people, or the tribal people of this country and elsewhere around the world, and what part, if any, do they have to play in what is happening currently?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really big one. I mean, just to start off with my background, so people get an idea of who I am, and also my connection to the original nations people here, is my background is actually, I worked for Telstra, which is Australia's largest telco here. And back in 2006, I was part of a team of 8 people, and we were responsible for rolling out the largest 3GSM mobile network this country had ever seen. So it was my job as a marketer to market, you know, picture messages and videos on the go and YouTube. And for most people, that was science fiction. That wasn't real. And we had to bring that into reality so people understood that this is actually available. And I thought what I was doing at that time was such an amazing thing, bringing people an ability to connect in ways that we couldn't do that before. So that was really exciting for me. And I was in my early 20s. I was plucked to do, you know, to do this work. And we traveled all around the country, won so many awards. And within 10 months, it was a $1 billion rollout. It was 5,000 new sites. And people started to get new routers in their home. So 3 months after having rolled out this network and this technology, my husband started getting having issues with sleep. So he said to me, Renat, can you just look into the research? I'd love to know if it's in my head, it's fine. But like, I feel like it's that router. And I said, yeah, no problem. So I went into the research database and I said, I'm going to look into the research. And I found that 38% of my market were concerned about health effects. So I go running into my executive director's office, and normally under any other circumstance, that triggers a campaign. And the look she gave me is a look that I will never forget for the rest of my life, because it sent chills down my spine. And it literally is the calling that we talked about. It's the stamp of a calling that you know you have to come back to in life, because that moment was pivotal for me. And I recognized that she was telling me to get my foot out of the door, that we're not going to be discussing safety. So I went to the research department. I had a friend there and I asked him what he knows about safety that I don't. And so he took me out for coffee. He said he wouldn't talk about it in the office. And he told me, you won't believe me. And I said, no, I will. And he said, mobile phones since the mid-90s are being tested on a plastic dummy called Sam. I said, a plastic dummy? And he said, literally a plastic dummy. They fill him up with liquid and they test him for on a 6 minute call. They put a phone 10 millimeters away from his head, not against his head. And they test him for 6 minutes and they see whether or not his head heats up by 1 degree Celsius over a 6 minute call. And if it doesn't, then it's deemed safe and millions of devices get sold on the market. They only have to test one device in a laboratory of their choice. And that is how safety testing has been done since the mid 90s. And my jaw, my stomach, my entire being just dropped. I couldn't believe that what I was uncovering was known to the research department, that we were rolling out all this technology, millions and millions of devices that were tested on a plastic dummy. So I started interacting with my colleagues and asking questions. And naturally, I got stonewalled. And instead of addressing it, I decided to leave. I thought I addressed it, but it took me 9 years to come back to this topic and really address it. And I had a lot of guidance from the original custodians here in this country to be able to help me get to this point of being able to speak about it. So this is how I'm circling back. But essentially, what I'd done is 3 weeks into finding out this information and trying everything that I could internally to wake people up, I left and I moved to Switzerland. And 9 years later, I came back. And I moved to Byron Bay. And in that time, I was following the research and the developments of 4G and all the studies that were coming out showing how sick children were getting, particularly from these devices and the addiction. Because if you understand, and what I understood after having had this conversation with my colleague, is that it was engineered this way so that you had a way to make people addicted to technology. So you create technology that's not safe with a rigged test, so you could create addiction and ultimately surveillance, which is what we're entering into now. And it took me 9 years to come back to Australia. In that time, I was married, I had a child. I came back and I went to my first farmer's market here in Byron when we moved here, and I got handed a stock 5G flyer. And that is when my husband looked at me and he nudged me and he said, right, you've been wanting to make this right for so long and this is it, this is the moment. And so what I've been doing is, I guess, a bit of a 5G ninja, and working with the most incredible group of activists that I could have ever asked for. And day in, day out, we speak about connection and we speak about disconnection, and we engage with the original nations of this country to be able to understand that better. And because we were able to do that over the last 2.5 years, we released this film called The Gaia Code. And The Gaia Code for us, I mean, it started as a passion project from a very creative crew here in Byron. And we were safe tech activists. We got together because we wanted to create a message around 5G that would cut through the noise. And we created a film that shows that juxtaposition of the natural beauty we have on this planet, but also the potential horrors of this high-tech world that's gone wrong. And as a movement, we have spent 2.5 years ticking every box, petitions, protests, lobbying governments locally and nationally, engaging with telcos, media, council presentations, everything you can think of. And it was really tough to cut through when you've got a David and Goliath battle going on with a $17 trillion industry. So that's why we did the Gaia Code. It was designed to shift gears. And there are so many subliminal messages in the film. The film alludes to all the the life-altering impacts of smart devices on every aspect of our life. And this includes effects on our health, on freedom, on privacy, everything from digital surveillance addiction and what we'll get into today, which is quite confronting, and that is the Internet of Bodies. Now, many people have been taken aback by the nudity in our film. So that's, you know, they're saying that there's an objectification of women. And it's incredible to me as a woman how many people become prude when they're addressed with the naked truth. Now, this film has been made by a team of mostly strong women and in the safe tech space. And we talk about objectification, but in this instance, Salo, our actress, she's, you know, for people to speak into that, it really misses the point, because for us, this is an empowerment piece about someone who is inadvertently discovering the sinister aspects of smartphones and wireless radiation, and is then able to reconnect with her nature within as well as externally, and she comes out grounded and whole. And it fascinates me that at a time when people are literally covering up with masks and full body outfits because they're so afraid of a virus, that this naked truth of who we are in our most natural state in our bodies is so frightening and so confronting for people. So our model is naked, and she's fully clothed in strong and important body art messages, and she's wrapped in this body art. These are hugely important messages during these times. They're subliminal, but there's also this beautiful understanding that's offered by Gaia, that if you understand it, what we are undressing is mind-boggling. And this is where people are starting to really join the dots between 5G and a darker web of issues that's already being played out in places like China, for example. So this isn't science fiction anymore. This is real life. And the only thing that the Gaia Code is here to address is, or to arouse, is conversation. The film it's confronting, it's provocative, and it's addressing all those aspects of profit and massive profits and our part in that and how they're getting away with it. So we've called it Gaia, in deep reverence to Mother Earth and who gives us everything. And the original custodians understand that. It's taught by us from the original custodians. It's their land. And we have a deep connection with nature, but they have it deeper. And within ourselves, they're able to bring us back to that natural being so that we can live lives that are much richer, and we become part of a sacred web of life. And so for me, nature, it's not just going for a walk in the park or a surf. It's about connecting to the nature within ourselves. It's about healing. It's about grounding. It's about being present. And right now, a lot of people are being called to do critical thinking. You know, critical thinking takes a lot of time from the headspace. But nature, intuition and feeling, it brings us to the heart. And now it's that time where we can do this welcome dance between the two. So, yes. Yeah, technology is a crucial part of our daily lives. We're on it right now, you and me, Pete, and it gives us a form of connection that we wouldn't otherwise have. But there is an underbelly that shouldn't be ignored, and that's something that our Indigenous cultures understand more than I think most people. And this is an invitation to do things differently, and I think that's what the Indigenous cultures really signify for me. I have a very, very good friend, Jambi Githable, here in the Northern Rivers. And he says to me, 5G is simply a symptom of our disconnection with nature. And that's all that it is. When we have our connection with nature, we understand where our ultimate security comes from, and that's through the mother. And I think once we understand our connection from the creator, the bloodlines that run through our bodies, and our deep connection to the Mother Earth, then we're grounded and we can walk in this way that is very meaningful.
So beautifully said. And there's a lot to unpack in there, or undress in there. It brings me back to, I'll never forget, I was on Sunrise one morning with Koshi and one of the other hosts, and they were having fun, making fun of me, doing their best to, because there was a photo of me naked and my wife naked or something like that. We live in the farm, so we're naked all the time. Like, pretty much that's our default. And they brought it up. Well, I think I was doing a cooking demonstration or something, and they just brought it up. And I said, you guys probably should try it a little bit more often, because they're so uptight. Yeah, I was just, I was taking the piss out of them a little bit, like I normally had. Just going, you know, you should try it. Because we live in this world where nudity is, you know, I know people that won't even be in their home naked for fear of what their partners will think, or it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre where we're at the moment, but also quite beautiful as well, because we're still not all conforming to the insanity, so to speak. And, you know, we're so unique in our bodies and in our thoughts. And, you know, we need that expression. We need to be free of fear. And I love it, because being in nature for so long now, living on the farm, you just witness all the animals. They're all naked. Some are a bit furrier or got more feathers than others, but, you know, there's no shame there. There's no shame. There's no guilt. There's nothing, you know. We seem to be the odd ones out in so many different aspects of the way that we go about our lives. The question I want to ask you is, because you talked about it, that we're using technology now, and we're just about to enter 2022. So how do you talk to, whether it be your family or friends or people, about the balance of technology? Because, you know, for me, I love doing this. I've got the Wi-Fi on, unfortunately, here, because we don't have a dedicated phone line. And we limit the amount of Wi-Fi that we have. You know, as soon as this interview's off, we turn it off. And we're fortunate where we actually live now. But one of the draw cards to being out here was there's no phone reception at all. So when the Wi-Fi is off, as far as we know, we're out of that system by choice, or we can enter back into it. And for the last 10 years, since I knew about the dangers of EMFs, Wi-Fi router off of a nighttime when I was living in the city, and making sure that there's a cord attached to our headphones when we're having a chat. So talk to me about balance, and talk to me about solutions or safeguarding the best way that you know how, from the research that you've done, to best navigate this world, this interesting world that we have co-created for ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. I love that we can jump straight into talking about the empowerment piece, because one of the things about safe technology, it's grounding with nature. Obviously, there's fiber optics, and I'm going to get into all these topics, hardwiring, the headsets that I'm on right now is AirTubes, and limiting our screen time, having real connections, et cetera. But safe technology is actually not anti-technology. It's just an invitation to do things differently. So I'm not definitely not rejecting technology. Balance, what you said about balance, is, after all, that's nature's most important presiding law. Yet, so we need to address the balance, and where it's disbalanced is in the addiction space. So if you look at, there's the Gonski Institute for Education, and in 2020, they wrote a report, and it highlighted the real concern about the ability of young people to socialize effectively and the prevalence of mental illness, mainly in the form of depression and anxiety, due to the pressure of trying to measure up in this cyber world and the lack of participating in the real world. So my friend Bryony Dalton, she wrote an article about the Gaia Code film, and in it she says, although these devices have undoubtedly enhanced our lives in many ways, they've also become the ultimate distraction from meaningful connections. She says technology is distorting our understanding of natural connection and our ability to recognize and cultivate more nourishing contact. So there's this line that she says that's so beautiful that I have to read it. It says, instead of sitting alone with peace in our hearts, we sit alone and stare at the peace in our hand. Instead of stepping outside into nature, we watch video compilations of animals doing funny things on our screens. Instead of holding conversation with our loved ones across the dinner table, our attention is held by the buzzing of the phone in our pocket. Instead of receiving the wisdom of Mother Nature into our being, we are bombarded with fleeting information on our devices. Our natural curiosity about existence, spirit, the universe, and the meaning of life has been captured and redirected towards the convenient gadget, this man-made extension of ourselves. It seems we are now only as connected as the strength of our signal and the speed of our internet, and it leaves me wondering, to 5G or not to 5G? And I just read that out because I think it's so powerful. And it really speaks into the balance of self-regulating, understanding that with anything that we do, it requires meaning, it requires balance on a larger scale than what we're used to right now. Because this technology, it has not been designed with any safety in mind. They literally took a 5-kilogram dummy head, which doesn't represent 97% of the world's population, and they fill it up with liquid and they test it in a non-biological way. There's no skin, there's no organs, there's no DNA, there's no cells, there's no reproductive organs for that matter. And they test a dummy because they're essentially saying it's a smart device. We're testing on dummies. So who are the real dummies? We are the experiment. We always have been. And manufacturers are not focused on safe technology because there is no proper safety testing. And people are absolutely, especially our children, they're addicted to devices. So they're not asking questions about safety. And we love our devices so much that we choose to only see the good in it. And it becomes an unconditional love of our devices. And this is an issue. Now, if you can imagine if the phones we used or the technology we used was properly safety tested, that would be a completely different discussion that we'd be having right now. But we need to stop being passive to consumerism and start demanding. In fact, we could start creating safe technology with proper safety studies and fiber optics. So this cord, where some people could see this if you're watching the playback on video, this is an Ethernet cable. And I just plug that into my laptop and I'm hardwired. So I don't actually use wireless. I'm wired and therefore there's no Wi-Fi needed in my house. And so these are examples of how we can use technology safely, but also the other element of technology safety is just regulating your use. If you can put away your device for a few hours a day to go connect with nature, that's far more than most people. It's incredible to me that most people can't let go of their devices. And that's where there's a disbalance. It's this complete addiction, this complete necessity of having to go meet a friend and put your phone on the table, and that buzzing, that distraction is constantly there, and it's a vortex. It's an artificial vortex that takes you out of the moment, and you have to recognize that when you're using that technology, it isn't taking you into a natural space. It's taking you into an artificial one, which I really want to get into and talk about some of these systems that are being put in place right now to take us even further away from our human natural ways of living. One of these examples I'll give you, Pete, is Tom Barnett and I, we're good friends here. And he talked to me, we had an interview and we talked about and actually laughed about whale watching season when it was on in Byron. And the amount of people we'd see at the lighthouse in Byron that weren't watching the whales, they were watching their phones watching the whales. And you're missing the moment. You're literally watching it on your screen. You're missing it. It's happening right there. And I think that's a really symbolic way to look at balance. I think it's a really funny way, but it's actually quite confronting. And another thing that I wanted to mention on the topic of balance is the power in our hands. Now, our security is being threatened, and the coercion we know is ripe at the moment. So there's no, you know, there's all this fight and flight response happening. And we just talked about that before, because people are feeling threatened to earn an income, to travel, to see their loved ones, et cetera. But we need to actually go back to what we can create. And what are the alternative pathways that take us away from this flight or flight response? And that's requiring a lot of creativity to come through from the hands, such as playing music, drawing, painting, gardening, building itself. Creating brings us back to our core. So that's why we are here. You won't need to numb yourself with technology because you'll be able to do something that's greater. And to make more of an effort to do something creative with your hands, these are some of the most sensitive areas in our body. So we have sensors on our hands, and it perceives a lot through what you said before about people touching you, but we perceive through touch. We feel, we connect, we recognize, and we're losing the connection to touch through all this tech handling. We're also forgetting the power in our hands when we touch an animal or hold a child or touch a tree or the soil. They are turning our hands into blunt instruments. And that's why our message is to boycott 5G phones, because the power is in your hands. If you decide to put your phone away, or if you decide to buy a 5G phone, you're either activating a connection to what is out there and real in the moment, or you're disconnecting by actually creating a network. So you're giving consent to a network for it to come to your hand, to your device. And so what are we really telling people? That this action is putting the power back into your hands. It's allowing us to decide what's our purchasing power. And if we want to disable this artificial world of surveillance and AI, we're going to have to start by getting very, very creative. And I think that's the main message of pretty much anything that I choose to work on, is that if it leads us towards alternative pathways, and if it's helping us create, those are the types of projects that I put my hand up for.
So powerful. I had a surf this morning after I was invited to do an interview this morning, which is quite rare. I don't do too many. I prefer to ask the questions. But this friend of a friend said, "Can you help us out on his podcast?" I said, "Sure, we'll have a chat." But afterwards, I had a surf, and I was in the surf, and I saw this young professional surfer, beautiful young man. And I said, "How you been, mate?" He goes, "Good." I said, "Are you going on the tour again?" He goes, "Yep, yeah, I'm just about to go." And he goes, "I'm looking forward to traveling again." And my first thought was, have you had to have taken certain things to be able to then travel? And I didn't want to put him on the spot, because he probably knows my stance. And I said, "Oh, well, have a great adventure, mate. Whatever, wherever it takes you, you know, do what you love." And then afterwards, I was in the car park getting changed and driving out. I saw another mate of mine, an older fella, and he'd just come back for his second surf. He goes, I needed to have a second surf today. It was only 10 or 11 in the morning. I said, "How come?" He goes, "Oh, I was just feeling really flat." "I just was feeling really shit today. So I figured the best way out of feeling like shit is to go for another surf." And I'm like, "Yep. That's what we need to do when you're feeling like shit, to reconnect back to nature, even if you think you've already got your full fill for the day." Mm-hmm. You can never get your fill when you're in nature. And it's fascinating what you're talking about there. And part of our journey, and I'll explain this, is we've just moved to a new property and it's 200 acres. And I was a few minutes late for you because I was out there doing some mowing for the last hour and a half. And I absolutely love it. So does my wife. We sort of both jostle to jump on the mower. And I know it's a electronic form or mechanical form of work, but there's something so beautiful about tending to the land in whatever way. And we've got 12 veggie beds that we've inherited from the last owner that's overgrown, and straight after this today and tomorrow, that's our job, you know, and there's probably a good 6-8 hours of work in there, and we're so looking forward to it. You know, it'll be tough work, but just that using our hands to create and to provide sustenance, because we know in a month's time we'll have some beautiful herbs, in 2 months' time we might have some amazing, or 3 months' time we might have some beautiful tomatoes and cucumbers, and we've got sweet potatoes that the last owners had left for us, so they're creeping around the garden beds at the moment. And what I find fascinating about being on the land is, and especially having some acreage or even a garden, is that you never get bored. There's always something to do. And as you're talking about building something over the last 8 years, I grew up in suburbia without having a father in or a male role model in my family to teach me manly things, if I can be so blunt as calling it that these days. But let's just say that rite of passage that fathers would hand down, or grandfathers or big brothers would hand down to the juniors in the family. I miss that growing up. So now I'm having to learn, and we've actually got a builder on the property today doing some work. And I called him last week because I had an issue with the mower. And I panicked. I'm like, fuck, how do I fix this? How do I do it? And he wasn't available. So I had to actually work out myself how to find the solution, how to find the answer to this issue. And I was so happy because I fixed it. And I went up to him later on when he came back and I said, it's all good, mate. I fixed it. I said, I'm learning. I said, I'm actually learning how to be responsible for fixing things. And he said to me, he goes, Pete, you can't be fucking good at everything. he goes, you've ticked a few boxes in your life. He goes, I said, yeah, but this is the new one for me. You know, I'm excited to be a beginner and learning these basic skills. And he said to me, he goes, I think I might buy you a power drill for Christmas as a gift for you. I'm like, uh-huh. I said, what a great gift that would be. And I guess I'm illustrating here that we have the ability to learn new things. And I'll reference a very dear friend of mine. He was asking me the other day, he goes, should I sell my business? You know, what do you think is going to happen in the world in the coming years? And I said, well, it looks like inflation's going to go up. It looks like staff shortages are going to happen. I said, it looks like they're going to keep running this agenda over and over and over and over again. So you'll have start, stop, you know, businesses may suffer, but there's also opportunities for new businesses to emerge. I said, if you're not adapting to what's happening, then I feel like you may get left behind. But I said, do you want to keep doing what you've been doing for the last few decades? Or is there something else you want to do? He goes, well, I just don't want to be bored. I said, well, have you got enough money to purchase a block of land? I said, because you'll never get bored there and there's always work for you to do. But the work is different. It's for yourself and potentially for other people if you start to grow things or farm things or raise things that you could share with your community. So I guess I'm using this opportunity here, and sorry to take over the conversation, that if we can be adaptable to find the solutions and to find the balance, then that's what I invite people to do, especially in this very chaotic time of uncertainty at the moment, where we feel like we can get washed around in the dumping waves of society. And I don't know where you'd like to go with that, but I just felt like that was important for me.
Yeah. Something that came through for me when you were just saying that, Pete, was that I do think we live in a world that is so obsessed with technology that we need to choose to be human. And I want to go into the significance of why being in our natural states, like what you said, being in on land and connecting to country is more important now than it could possibly ever be in this sort of unfolding of events that are transpiring around the world. Because for people that don't see what's coming, these digital ID systems and how that's going to play a role in our ability to be human, this is going to sound so eccentric to most people, but I think people are ready to hear it. And that's about the link between 5G and surveillance. And if you've ever wondered what it's like, I mean, I'm an activist. I never thought I'd say that because I've always had a corporate background. So for me to come out and say I'm an activist, it even sounds a bit funny when I say it. But it's if you were to imagine an activist in China speaking out against injustices in the social media world, the system of this social credit, which was officially envisaged in the mid-90s, it actually assigns a ranking to each person in the country, and that's 1.4 billion, I think, in China. It's all encompassing. It's a system of judgment. Basically, it's based on how obedient a person is to their government. So their responsibilities is like a credit score, a social credit score. And you might end up stripped of your ability to do every basic thing you need to survive. So there are people restricted from owning property, flights, being able to buy food, everything you can think of. These are like permission slips. And the system already is real life. You know, it's not a conspiracy theory. It exists. And it's a digital one world system that they're trying to put forward to control humanity and our movements and to remove us from this ability to have, I guess, sovereignty on our bodies and our choices. Now, where in a Western society, and most people think that such credit scores would never catch up to, say, Australia, but then they're not seeing what's coming. And we have right now, by the end of this year, they're expecting 490 million 5G smartphones to be sold on the market. And this is a trillion-dollar industry that wants to put up 5G towers across every and satellites across every conceivable landscape. And this idea of bigger, better, faster is what it's being sold. You know, it's being sold for something faster. But what we're actually being sold, which is not in the terms and conditions, is a device that has even greater potential for data collection and surveillance than we've ever known before. And this is not only just experimental technology, but it's driving a social credit ID, digital ID system. And it can be linked to everything from your food, to your keys, to your bike, to your bed, to your bathrooms. Everything will be linked on this Internet of Things grid of smart, you know, smart devices. So these small cells will go every 200 meters down urban streets. Now you're talking about land, but urban streets. I grew up in suburbia as well. Could you imagine a backpack size antenna every 200 meters on utility poles, on people's roofs, outside kids' bedroom windows, so that the internet can connect everything that you own and collect your data and track your movements? And I mean, honestly, this is, these vaccine certificates, they're going to drive this whole new field of digital ID systems, because what Dr. Naomi Wolf explains, and she says it so brilliantly, she says that vaccine passports, that this platform, it's the same platform as the credit system in China that enslaves these people, but that it is the CCP, they can find any dissident in 5 minutes because of this 360-degree surveillance of the social credit system. So what does that actually mean? It means that you have a permission slip of what is normal or what is correct and in terms of your behavior in society. And I love what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. says. He says that 5G will become a tool for surveillance, and to make no mistake, that it's become a weapon of obedience. And I don't love what he says. I just think it's so powerful in the way that he said it, because it's these Internet of Things. It's also the Internet of Bodies. And I know I just said Internet of Bodies before, and most people are thinking, what does that even mean? But if they're injecting nanoparticles through these jabs and through smart dust, which is dust that they're spraying, the World Economic Forum talk about it, it actually has sensors that communicate through our bodies to the internet. So if you've got the World Economic Forum speaking about nanoparticles, smart dust, now each of these sensors are smaller than a grain of sand, and they have antennas in them, and they can organize themselves inside the body that can monitor and change our bodily functions. And that's called the Internet of Bodies. That's what they're creating right now. And if you listen to Alison McDowell, I think I did an interview with her. She's exceptional. And she's probably one of the most amazing speakers on this topic. And she encouraged me to look into the spatial web 3.0. And that's essentially this idea of the internet coming out of our screens and our phones, and it's coming out of wearable tech, and it's laying on the land. So these larger sensor networks, I mean, they're developing Internet of Things. These sensors are in paint, in pavement, building materials. They smart up everything, and everything is going to be smarted up and emitting this radiation. And I mean, the amount of sensors that they're imagining are beyond anything that we could reconcile with, you and I, Pete. It's out of this world. So you've got to imagine living in the real world, where out there in the real world, it's permissioned access. You know, I'm sorry, you don't have permission to do that on your screen. So for example, you're trying to access a site on your laptop, but this is the real world. And these QR codes, they were baby steps into that. They're like, you know, the vaccine passports that are being rolled out right now. They're normalizing it. They're allowing you or not allowing you to do something. So if you're interfacing with a door into a building or a payment system or a physical intervention of some kind, there's a token that says, oh, either you're allowed to have that right or you're not. And what Alison explained to me was that there's the Moonshot Project, and that says that by 2050, humans will exist outside the need for a physical mind and body, time and space. So how do you actually get there by 2050 unless you essentially try to make the necessity of having a physical body a burden? And if you can make having a physical body a burden through a pandemic or a chronic pain or radiation sickness, then what will happen, and this is quite compelling, is that people will be glad, not just able, they'll be glad to upload their consciousness into some sort of avatar. And that's what they're hurrying us towards. They're hurrying us towards getting out of our bodies. This is an anti-human, it's an anti-life agenda. And this is how the World Economic Forum crowd sees the future. They call it post-human. And this really ought to give people an understanding of the significance of what we're all doing here and why connecting to nature is now more important than ever before. Because as John B. Githable says, he says that there's only one true safety on this planet, and that is the connection to the earth. Everything else, he says, is just to make up for that lack of safety. Everything, police, guns, government, drugs, it's all there to help us cope with our disconnection to the natural world, to the mother. So if we spend our lives chasing the degree, the job, money, house, possessions, you know, good looks, the marriage, the family, all of that, it's a never-ending attempt to forge some sort of a connection to something that's meaningful, but perhaps it's looking in the wrong places for answers, because truly meaningful connection is within ourselves and our natural habitat, you know, within Mother Earth, and that's our home. And when we do live in harmony with ourselves and with the earth, we don't get taken away by these post-human agendas. We understand our purpose in the world, and we can take responsibility, in fact, radical responsibility for the role that we feel we play in our community, and we become so empowered as individuals and also as a collective. So that's where, you know, the risk is of digital ID systems. And if there's anything I always leave people with, it's this understanding that this technology is designed to teach us just like anything, and we need to change the frequency game. And that is the biggest lesson of 5G. If we raise our vibration, if we go into nature and we have real human connection, that's what I feel is the biggest lesson of 5G. We need to raise our frequencies and imagine a better world and take radical responsibility in playing our part in it.
Hmm. Alrighty, you were taking me down some rabbit holes there, which I love. So for people, you talked about the fight or flight before, and let's just say people, after listening to you speaking for the last 10 minutes on all of that, are like, fuck, fuck. Instead of going into the fight or flight, Let's paint a different picture, or I shouldn't say paint a different picture, but let's, because you must have contemplated this on a daily basis, like, how the fuck do we get through this? And can we get through this? Will we get through this? Is it written in the stars? Is this part of our natural awakening process, that this is inevitable and this has to happen for us to maybe evolve, you know, because I've watched all the Black Mirror episodes, and what you're talking about, me and you, every Black Mirror episode is like, yep, that can happen. Yep, that can happen. Yep, that's probably going to happen. Yeah, that's definitely going to happen. And anybody that hasn't watched Black Mirror, I would highly encourage you to watch it with a very open mind. And I'm not promoting the TV series as such, but it does paint a pretty interesting picture of how human consciousness and technology will form these different relationships, and it could go in very, very many different directions. So apart from just connecting with nature, how do you think it's going to go? Because a lot of people think that humanity is going to nearly split into two different timelines or parallel ways in which we go about living. So what's in your crystal ball, Renat? And is it good? Is it going to be bumpy? Will it always be bumpy? Or is there an end goal for us?
I think I'm an apocalyptic optimist. I think there are moments where I think to myself, gosh, this is the apocalypse, and this is all over. And then there are other moments where I really do see the goodwill of humanity coming through. And I think we are inherently good by nature. And I think many people are awakening from the oppression. The timing of whether or not the timelines will match to, you know, being able to turn the tide, I think we just have to play our part without really getting too attached to the outcome. I think that's the way that I survive best, is if I know that I'm going to play my part regardless of the outcome, that for me is a lot more of a healing and grounding place than only doing something knowing that there's going to be a positive result. So I feel people need to make choices based on where they're called to do the work and do that anyway. I use the word anyway because that's the word that I use for myself. And I think I go up and down like most people. You know, there are days I think yes, and there are days that I think no, but it doesn't change the things that I try to do to create alternative pathways and change. So that stays consistent no matter what, you know, everything else throws at us. I come back to my place, my calling, my purpose, and I do that anyway.
I loved your hand signals then. It reminds me of a meme that I saw where it's like the pendulum or whatever that device is where on one side it says, we're all fucked, and the other side of it says, yeah, we're spiritually awakening, you know, and me is right in between, you know, that we go from this, we're fucked, or no, this is all perfect, or no, we're fucked. And I think probably humanity's probably always gone through that dark and light duality, and perhaps it'll continue to exist for all eternity, because that might be our game of life, our lesson, to find the balance between those two extremes and let go of whatever it is that comes. And can we, and it's one of the things I've said on the podcast once or twice over the years, is when I was teaching my girls how to surf, we would stand on the rocks, and you know, I've hurt myself jumping off the rocks into the surf many times, so I take a lot more time and I'm a lot more cautious these days. And I was teaching my girls, I said, you know, when we jump off the rocks into the surf, you know, we need to be so aware of our surroundings. We need to be watching the horizon for what's coming. We always need to be. You never turn your back. You always confront what's coming. And sometimes we may need to take a few steps back to get out of harm's way. Sometimes we can actually plant our feet firmly and get really, really strong and stand up to the force that is coming, because the force will pull back at some stage. And then when it's time to jump into the ocean, that's when we go. But we're always aware, you know, we're not running, we're not hiding. We're just being fully consciously aware, because it can be life and death there. Or you can damage yourself and put yourself into a pretty dangerous situation that produces a lot of pain. And I often think about that with what's happening in the world at the moment. Like, okay, sometimes I need to take a few steps back and just switch off technology. Connect into nature. Some days I want to fucking just stand there and just face it head on and just know that I'm unwavering, no matter how much shit I read or hear, that it won't affect me. It'll just come through and wash back. And then there's other times I'm like, no, fuck it, I'm actually going to be active and participate and change the course. Yeah, that's what I felt like I needed to add here today. I've absolutely loved.
That was really nice what you said.
I've loved. I love that. Chatting to you today, Renata, and I really would love to invite you back for another conversation in the new year, because I would love to dive in deeper into your wisdom and your knowledge and more solutions and more understanding into this world that I know a little bit about, but not a lot. Again, I'm a beginner, I'm a learner, I'm a student, and I would love to learn more from you, because you have a wonderful way of explaining this information in a way that can penetrate people and to give them a different perspective. So I want to tell you that I love you. I thank you for your time today, and I look forward to perhaps meeting you in person at one of these events that you you put together. I'd be honored.
That would be great. Thank you, Peter. I really love this interview, and I can honestly say that it's very refreshing to me to have conversations with people that have their masks off in this masquerade of life. And I think this is one of the most important things we do, is speak our truth, and to do it together. It's really powerful. So I'd love to meet you in person. I'd love to go back on your show, and I can't wait to hear more of how this all unfolds.
Yep. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.